It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins, who's on the line with us. Good morning, Cecil, and Merry Christmas.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Wonderful for a Tuesday and a few days before Christmas, so anxious for our conversation today. Wes Collins, who's in studio this morning. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mike.
Gave me a little preview on what we're going to talk about, helping folks out, perhaps, as we always do with Let's Talk Legal, talking about the Small Claims Court, Small Claims Court 101, so to speak. One of you two gentlemen can take the lead on this. Basically, tell us, what is a Small Claims Court?
Okay, well, first of all, it's really a very useful, if you will, jurisdiction for a lot of our clients, a lot of the public. And we want to talk about some of the advantages of taking, of trying to have your case resolved in the small claims court, which we will do here in just a moment. But the bottom line is that our listeners just need to know that this court exists, that it does not necessarily and many times does not have as many lawyers involved in the courtroom as we see certainly in district court, and even almost always in superior court there is a lawyer involved in the case. In small claims court, you have an opportunity to go and speak your piece and put your paperwork before a particular judge, and then, of course, there would be a ruling. So it's a very useful court. Very busy court, I might add, and so we want to kind of, you know, give some information about that today. The jurisdictional limit now on that, Wes, is what? Is it 10 or 15?
10.
Or has it 10?
$10,000.
Right. Correct.
Okay.
Right.
So let's just let's make that clear what I mean, and then I'll let Wes say some things about the rulings. In other words, if your amount in controversy is $10,000 or less, then you have jurisdiction in the small claims court. You can elect to put your controversy or your conflict in that particular court and seek some resolution. If your case involves, you know, amount in controversy that's more than $10,000, you know, $20,000 or $15,000 or $50,000, then you're probably in the wrong place. Because, you have a matter, you're seeking more in recovery and or relief than that court is allowed to give. But if your matter's worth $10,000 or less, then you certainly, are entitled to begin in that courtroom.
And, you know, $10,000 is nothing to sneeze at. But, what's the first, if someone's going to represent themselves by themselves, pro se, what's the first step that someone does to get on the calendar, get on the docket, in small claims court?
Go to the court.
The clerk? The clerk's office?
Go to the clerk of court and tell them what your situation is, and they'll help you with the paperwork.
Okay.
You know, I thought that it would be a good topic for, you know, here we are at the end of the year. I mean, we're always trying to help folks in the community as much as we can. Obviously, we're very busy, you know, working on cases day in and day out for our clients. But, you know, we want this radio program to be a service, you know, to the community as well. And really, the small claims court is, you know, in many cases, a way that folks without legal counsel can resolve their issues or try to resolve whatever issue they may be, they may have. You know, the small claims court. So let me kind of back up. So we wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just to help folks to understand how the process works. So you don't step into a problem and you kind of understand what you need to do in advance and just get a lay of the land with regard to how that works. The small claims court, in many cases, is going to deal with summary ejectment or what's also known as evictions. More than basically any other kind of case. If you go to small claims court, in any respective county and on any respective, any term of, small claims court, the majority of what you're going to hear as far as the cases are going to be summary ejectment cases. So, as you know, however, for about a year, you know, we had a moratorium on those until the Supreme Court came down and said, CDC, you don't have the authority to do that. And now, you know, that's no longer the case from a federal standpoint. We don't have the moratorium in North Carolina either. So the court, there's some catch up, you know, toward the end of this year mm-hmm. with regard to, you know, summary ejectments and landlords and
landlord tenant, right?
Landlord tenant type thing, sure. type things. So there's that, but we just generally want to talk about, you know, how the process works. Like you say, what do you do to get started? What do you need to do to get prepared? What happens at the hearing? What happens after the hearing? Right. What do I need to be aware of?
Yeah.
So basically, you know, to answer your question, you know, you go to the court, talk to the clerk of court about what your issue is. You can have an issue that the amount in controversy is over $10,000 and go to small claims court, but the small claims court is limited at its jurisdiction at 10. Right. So the paperwork.
I think that's very important, and I was going to mention that earlier. Wes, kind of say that again. You know, if you're willing to accept a $10,000 finding in your favor, even mm-hmm. though you've lost 15 or 17, if you want the process to go by quicker, you can go to that court, right?
Absolutely. The court is just limited at its jurisdictional level of $10,000. So, and know that there's the concept of what we've referred to before on the program as res judicata or collateral estoppel. It's mainly res judicata in this situation. What that is let's say that you're entitled to $20,000, but you decide to go to small claims court and you get 10 and nobody appeals from it within 10 days and it's done. Well, you can't go back to another court and try to get your additional funds.
It's over.
Yeah. It's already been litigated.
Yeah.
It's over with. Also, let's say you have a small claims case, and let's say you're a landlord and you have a tenant who hasn't paid you and the tenant owes you whatever amount, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, doesn't matter, $2,000, $1,000, doesn't matter. And you go to court and you seek possession of the property, you want the person evicted, and you seek recovery of your damages, okay, and you get a judgment for both of those things. Well, once that's done, it's done. You can't go back and get more. For example, let's say that you find out that you kind of got ahead of it. You hadn't gotten your bill yet for all the damage that's been done. And there's another $5,000 or $6,000 or $10,000 of damage. Well, you're done at that point in time if you've already gotten your judgment. So you need to be careful about that. Mm-hmm. So what is you could have a situation, for example, I'm getting a little bit into detail here, but you can have a situation, for example, where someone, let's say, someone owes you $30,000 or $40,000 because of back rent. Because of, and you're the landlord, or because of damage beyond normal wear and tear, those type things. And then you're thinking, well, how does that work? If I can only get $10,000 in small claims court, but I have to go to small claims court to get possession because that's where the jurisdiction is with summary ejectment. Well, what you do is you file an action for summary ejectment in small claims court and don't seek any damages at all. So all you're doing is seeking possession. You're getting possession back. You're getting order of the court allowing you to get your property back. And then you file a separate action for the damages, either in district court, which has a limit of $25,000, or superior court, which is going to be over $25,000. So just got to be careful about what you're seeking and what you get in small claims court from a money standpoint. You need to know that once you get that, if there's not an appeal from it, okay, within the 10 days, then you're done as far as that goes.
Cecil, the way Wes has unpacked this, he's talking about, like, don't be too impetuous. Don't wait till you have all your ducks in a row, so to speak, so you know what you're going, what the final number you're going for in small claims court. If you take too long, are there statutes of limitations that might kick you out of small claims court? In other words, they owed me money, but it was 4 years ago. I mean, is there some sort of time frame that we're talking about?
Most of those are three.
3 years.
Yeah, because small claims court is a court that deals with relatively simple issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not going to get into at small claims court things like constructive fraud, punitive damages, these type of things. They want it to be more black and white. they want it to be more of a contractual type situation.
Right.
They really don't want to get into negligence type cases. They can.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a negligence case where the amount of controversy is $10,000 or less is, you know, not much to that, really. Yeah.
So if it is cut and dry and you're before a judge, right,
yeah,
in a courtroom, does the judge render a decision right away or does he come back with a decision typically?
Almost every time in small claims court, you're going to get a ruling while you're there because they have many cases that are before them.
So it's
they don't really have the time to go back and look at 20 cases and send emails out or whatever to let you know what the ruling is later on, or, you know, put send the judgment to you. So usually in my experience, but every judge can do it the way they want to do it, but in my experience, you're going to get a ruling from the bench while you're there in court.
So based on the evidence presented, they side with the
plaintiff or defendant.
Yeah. Then can the side that lost make the appeal right then and there?
Either side can, really. If you won, you know, why would you want to? Yeah. Well, it may be because the number is lower than you thought you were supposed to get. So I'm going to appeal and send it up to district court.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you lost, I mean, obviously you would potentially want to appeal, as well. So, you know, to kind of go back and start at the beginning there, you go to the clerk of court, you indicate, you know, I think I want to go to small claims court. This is what I have going on. They can kind of help you with that and get the paperwork to you. The paperwork, you can fill it out. This is all things that you can do without an attorney. I would, as a side note, mention that if there's an attorney on the other side, you probably need an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you show up in court, in small claims court, and there's a lawyer on the other side, probably won't go well for you, depending on what the circumstances are. But you should ask for a continuance in most cases so that you could get legal counsel. Also, if you're there on behalf of a corporation or an LLC, the court in almost every case will require you to have an attorney because there's just some law in North Carolina indicating that if you're in court on behalf of a legal entity such as that, you have to have legal counsel representing the interest of the whole. So sometimes that is a basis for a continuance, too.
Would you not know that the opposition has an attorney prior to the court date?
Nope.
So it's almost like come into the line of scrimmage in a football game and you don't like the way the defense is, you call timeout. Right?
T.O., right.
Yeah.
So that's correct. But let me kind of contrast that just a little bit, Mike. You know, let's say you're in a different court. You're in federal court. You're in superior court. You're in district court. Those are different because the pleadings are different. What I mean by that is that once you file a complaint in these, let's call them bigger courts, okay, courts where there are attorneys more often, then the other side is going to file an answer, normally within 30 days in state court and 20 days in federal court, but that's just that detail. So when an answer is filed, what do you learn? Well, you're going to see who the lawyer is on the other side.
Sure.
And there's a lot of stuff that happens before you get to any hearing in these, as I say, bigger courts. There's discovery. There's motions. There's all this stuff. So we know that there's counsel involved. In small claims court, there's no requirement, and in most cases, there is not an answer that has to be filed or one that is filed in response to the complaint this filed. Because you get to small claims court really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, normally as you file the complaint within 10 days or so, the court is normally setting the hearing and you're going to court and having your hearing. And so there's not all this discovery and all this prep that takes place.
Yeah, it's pretty much that.
It's more of, okay, here we are. It got filed. Let's go tell the judge what it's all about.
Yeah.
The rules of evidence are very relaxed. There's not limitations on how testimony so much can be provided. In most cases, you don't have a problem, for example, presenting evidence through like an affidavit. Well, if you go try a case in a bigger court, as I say, you're not going to be able to show up and put on your evidence with an affidavit unless you're in what's called a summary judgment. And the reason why is because that's hearsay. It's an out-of-court statement offered for the truth of the matter asserted, number one. And number two, you can't cross-examine a piece of paper, an affidavit, okay? But in small claims court, there's a convenience factor, okay? The owner of this property lives in South Carolina? I mean, are we really going to make him come all the way to Craven County or Carter County or wherever? Mm-hmm. Or is the affidavit okay? Normally, the affidavit is going to be fine.
Right.
So that's a good example of how it's relaxed in order to get down to what are reasonable facts. Okay, but you still need to be ready. You need to have your paperwork ready. You need to have your photographs ready if the house is torn up or whatever it may be. You need to have your stuff ready to just tell your story, okay, so that the magistrate judge in the small claims court can understand what the issues are and what the facts are, what the evidence, you know, will show. And you don't have to be overly sophisticated about it, but you need to be logical. You need to be able to just be able to
tell your story. Speed dating. It's not Law and Order 50 minutes.
It's pretty quick.
You got to move it because he's got a lot of cases.
It's
or he or she's got a lot of cases to render decisions on.
It's pretty quick.
Each day.
Right.
Let's take a break on that note. This is interesting. We're talking about the Small Claims Court 101 and good information there if you're in that situation. If you feel you need counsel, I do, I would call Harvell and Collins, 252-726-9050. We'll continue our conversation after this brief timeout. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. We're talking about the Small Claims Court and interesting discussion here as far as the thresholds, $10,000 we learned. You can represent yourself. If you see an attorney on the other side, it might be best to ask for a continuance and get legal counsel yourself. So a lot to learn in something that is usually simple and cut and dry, but it can get complicated real fast, I would imagine.
Yeah, be careful, you know, of course. What you ask for, if you get that number, that judgment, then you're not going to be able to go back and get more later. That's that res judicata. Cecil and I can talk a little bit now about the very important issue of having a right to appeal in small claims court, which is very much different than any other court, and that's a de novo right. And basically what that is that, you know, in small claims court, you're not entitled to a jury. You have a magistrate judge hear it. There's no discovery. You get there quickly. It seems like it could be maybe somewhat of an unfair situation because the parties don't have enough time to get ready so fast. Well, that's resolved in the right to appeal from the decision. Upon the decision of the small claims court being announced, you have 10 days to file for a trial de novo. You just have to pay the court cost. It's like $100. It's right around there, maybe 80, maybe 120. It's somewhere right in there where you pay those court costs to the clerk and file your appeal for a de novo trial, and that wipes the slate clean.
Start
like
over.
The small claims matter did not even take place at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes up to district court. That's a very important concept here, and maybe Cecil can chime in on that as well.
Yeah, we have 5.5 minutes left. So you have 10 calendar days in which to file an appeal.
Right.
After the decision is rendered by the judge or
magistrate. 10 calendar days, and if it falls on a Saturday or Sunday or a holiday, you have until the next day.
Can you do it right in the court? Say, Your Honor, I wish to appeal this verdict.
You can do it verbally, but it's not. It doesn't really have the effect.
Until
you have to actually file the notice of appeal and pay the court costs. If you don't do that, then that's a problem. I sometimes have clients I see on my calendar pop up appeal from clerk's order or decision in small claims court or whatever it may be. And I notice those, and oftentimes I'll have my paralegal, before I've even met with the person, contact the people who are coming to see me to make sure they don't miss the 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because Don't go to small claims court, get an adverse ruling that you want to appeal from, set an appointment with your attorney, and then you can't get in to see your attorney, or your attorney can't see you for 12 days.
And you're out that
window. Then go see your attorney on day 12 or 11.
Game over.
It's done. Too late. Make sure the notice of appeal is properly done first. And then, you know, meeting with the lawyer can happen, you know, shortly thereafter.
So the appeal, Cecil, then you make the appeal with the clerk of court. You're on the calendar now in district court. What happens now?
Well, I think the key word here is a legal word, which is de novo, which means that just all matters, all facts, all testimony, all documents, everything is completely kind of wiped clean, if you will, swiped clean from the magistrate court, the small claims court, and now starts again at the district court. So that's a good thing. What that sometimes means is that the magistrate court, small claims court, Mike, has been an opportunity for the person to discover, if you will, the information, to look at the documents that are being laid forth before the court that are against them or that are for them or who the witness might be, things of that nature. You're going to be a little bit more prepared, obviously, in district court from a standpoint of knowing what your adverse party has to say, what they're thinking, what their evidence happens to be. So those are good things. But the bottom line is that the case starts anew, brand new, in the district court, and off we go again in seeking a remedy.
And again, when you're in district court, you have a district court judge at the bench. You're not with a jury. That doesn't happen until you kick it upstairs
You can ask the jury. That's an important point. Glad you brought that up. On the form document, we call these documents the AOC forms, Administrative Office of the Court forms. Mm-hmm. Okay, and a lot of this small claims court is driven by these AOC forms. That's not really the case when you get to district court as much, and certainly not really the case at all when you get to superior court. Mainly the attorneys are preparing the different pleadings. They're not using forms, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. But when you file your notice of appeal de novo from small claims court, there's a box you can check in that AOC form where you can request a jury. So you do have an actual legal right to a jury once you get to district court.
Does that increase your court fees then if you ask for a jury?
No, it does not. It doesn't. But you have that right, and you have to be careful, you know, when you file that notice of appeal to think through that about whether you actually – you know, want a jury or not. Most cases, I like to have a jury. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see the jury as the equalizer.
Yeah.
Frankly, if you have a less experienced attorney on the other side, or even a pro se litigant on the other side, and I'm going to be on my side, I'm very comfortable with juries. Mm-hmm. I try cases before juries quite frequently. And hey, if my experience with juries is going to put me ahead of you, then I'm going to want a jury. But it's case by case. Mm-hmm. It's whatever you want to, whatever you think. But you might not, as a pro se litigant, meeting a litigant that doesn't have an attorney, kind of understand the implications of jury, non-jury, what all that means. So that decision, in most cases, is more logically and properly made by someone who has experience, such as, you know, a lawyer that you would hire.
Do you go through the same process in a jury trial as far as what do they call that, armoire? I can't pronounce that fancy legal term.
Yeah, voir dire.
Voir dire.
Yeah.
So you go through the jury selection process.
Oh, yeah. It could be a very tedious,
and then it
long
has to be,
process.
It has to be unanimous, right? 12-0 or?
Yep.
12-0
it's
either
civil,
way.
It's civil, yes. Yep. Greater weight of the evidence, unanimous verdict, and, you know, in many cases it's 12 jurors. A lot of times in all jury situations, you'll stipulate to something like, we'll pick 12, but the verdict can be 10 or more. And what that doesn't mean 10 out of 12. That means if two of them get sick, we still got 10 and we're good. So we don't have to have two alternates or whatever, three alternates sitting there listening, but they never vote on anything.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Gentlemen, great conversation, great topic. I hope that helps our audience. I know it does. And to both of you, Merry Christmas. And we look forward to future conversations on Let's Talk Legal.
Thanks, Mike.